give a talk at this conference. A great pleasure to me. So I'll talk about the metric theory of Parkin residues. This is my PhD thesis, which I'm about to complete. I plan to complete it in spring under Professor Havansky's supervision. So the Parkin residues generalize the classical one-dimensional residues, which everybody knows from the complex analysis, undergraduate complex analysis courses. So let me briefly remind you some very basic stuff. So if you have, let X be a complex curve, compact curve, and omega be a meromorphic one form on X. Meromorphic one form on X. So then one can define at every point P in X, one can define the residue of omega at P. And so it's not good to write here, so let me go to this word. So there are two ways to do it, to define the residue. So one way is algebraic, and well, is to use the local parameter and power series expansion, and another is some integral over a circle. So let me divide the blackboard in two pieces. So one way is to do the following. So we have a curve, we have the point P, we can introduce a local parameter T. So local parameter. Then, so this is the point P. So then near this point, our form can be expanded into power series. So it's the sum of some a n t to the n dt. And then the residue of omega at the point P is just a minus 1. So, and one can easily prove that this doesn't depend on the parameter. And another way is to do the integral. So instead of introducing the parameter, let's take a circle going around the point P. That's the note of gamma. And then one can integrate omega over gamma. And this is also the residue at P of omega, well, up to this factor, which I always forgot to write. So, well, very classical result that these two are equal. So, and also, there is a nice fact about the total sum of these residues over the complex curve X. So the theorem is that the sum over all points in X of residues is equal to zero. So, well, I should say something about the sum. There is terribly many summons here. So this basically that means that there's only finitely many non-zero summons, and the sum of these finitely many summons is zero. So, well, I know the proof to this theorem on the right side of the board, and it's very simple. So if you consider this compact surface, then the only points where our residue is not zero is the poles of our form. And then one can cut this poles, cut small neighborhoods of these poles from the surface, and then the rest of the surface will serve as a two-dimensional chain which bond is exactly the union of those circles. So, and our form is closed and smooth in the complement of this hole. So this by Stokes' theorem, we got this relation. So this was the classical story. And the partial residues, partial theory generalized this story to the multidimensional case. And partial does it on the left side of the blackboard. So for him, so in fact, partial theory works over in much more general settings, not only over complex numbers, and therefore there is no integrals involved. So it's just some coefficients and power series. So the multidimensional case, dimensional generalization. Generalization is was done by Parshan and Lamadze. Well, at least one of the variants of the generalization, and I think the most natural one. Parshan and his student Lamadze, it's 70s. However, there were no geometric counterpart of this theory for a while, and that's what my talk is about. So, geometric on the geometric side. So that's what I will talk about. Okay. So, but first, let me talk a little bit about the partial stuff. So, the way he generalizes the residues. So the main difference between the multidimensional case and the one-dimensional case is that instead of fixing just one point here, we need to fix a whole bunch of sub-varieties, a flag of sub-varieties. So let's consider such a flag. So have Vn, Vn minus 1, and so on, down to V1 and V0. So here, VIs are irreducible varieties, and the dimension of VI is I. Well, now I need to do some technical procedure. I kind of need to normalize this flag. So if all the elements of the flag are normal, then we can avoid it. But in general, they could be non-normal, and we need to do something with it. So let me do this technical procedure, and after that, I will give some examples. So, well, I want to normalize everything. So let me start from normalizing the VN. So this is the normalization map. Well, then we take the preimage of Vn minus 1 here. Well, to be honest, it's not the full preimage. When we normalize, it could happen that the preimage has some components, reducible components of smaller dimension. So we want to drop these components. We only keep the n minus 1 dimensional components of the preimage. Well, you can think of it as just a preimage. Well, so I started normalizing, but this guy is not normal yet, so I need to normalize it as well. So this is another normalization map, and then I take the preimage again, and so on. So in the end, well, let me put those here. So in the end, we get W1, which is a curve. We normalize this curve, and we got the preimage of V0, W0, which is just zero-dimensional variety, so it's just finite set of points. So Well, this is called normalization diagram. I call it normalization diagram. And let me consider some examples. So the first example will be the cone over the figure 8. So I draw the real picture, but I really care about the complex surface. So, well, one can define this cone of the figure 8 by polynomial and consider it in complex domain. So I consider the following flag. This is V2, and the V1 is just the critical locus of this thing. Well, single locus of this thing. And V0 is just the origin. So what happens if we normalize this thing? Well, what is the normalization topologically? So topologically, the only thing we do is that we split the local reducible components. So here, our surface is reducible, locally reducible, at the vertical line. Everywhere but at the origin. At the origin, it is irreducible. So what happens is that we split these irreducible components. So in fact, we got just usual cone. And instead of one line, we got two lines. So this is an invisible here, and this is visible. Okay? And the pre-image here is going to be two intersecting lines. Then we normalize further, and got just two lines. And the pre-image is 2 points. Okay, so this is one example. In the second example, I don't need the third line, so I think it will fit here. So the second example is the Witte umbrella. So again, I draw the real picture, and I care more about the complex picture. So we have the handle, and in the upper half space, we have the following picture. At every point on the positive half line, we have two lines intersecting, and then it goes like this. Kind of the angle between these two lines becomes smaller and smaller as we approach the origin, and at the origin we got just one line. And it's kind of, and these sections, these vertical sections, are parabolas. So, and the flag is again so just a vertical line. So let me keep some space here. And the origin. So again, our surface is reducible, locally reducible at every point of the vertical line except for the origin. However, the picture is a bit different from the above one, and the difference is the following. If you take this point and let it go around the origin in this one-dimensional stratum, the components interchange. So here, they do not interchange. So it's, if you start on one component, you go around the origin, and you get to the same component. And here they interchange. So instead of two lines here, as above, in the pre-image of the one-dimensional stratum, we'll get one line, but it double covers our line. So actually, the normalization here is just plane, and there is one line here, and the map is just double cover on this line, so nothing changed, but the away from this line nothing changed, but on this line we just glue together Z and minus Z. By the way, this is a nice way to understand the geometry of the Witten umbrella and complex domain. So, yeah. So the preimage here is just line. Okay, that would be vertical. And this map is Z goes to Z squared, basically, and just one point here. So see, you see, there had 2 points, and here have just 1 point. And basically, the difference is that here the components interchange as we go around, and here they do not interchange. So, yeah. Say it again? Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter to me, so I just... Okay, so these are two examples. Okay, so now, well, since I want to generalize this part of the picture, that means that I need to introduce some local parameters. And as long as we have this normalization diagram, we have this nice pieces of this diagram, like here, 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 and so on, where we have a hypersurface in a normal variety. And that means that we can introduce a parameter here. So un here, un minus 1 here, and so on, u1 here. And what are those parameters? These are meromorphic functions, which has 0 of order 1 at the general point of the corresponding hypersurface. So since these varieties are normal, we always can find such meromorphic functions. This is kind of basic property of normal varieties. So once again, un uk has, to be more precise, I want those functions to be defined on the whole space Vn, and I want them to I want to be able to restrict them to wk tilde, and I want this restriction to have 0 of order 1, 1 at a general point of wk minus 1. Okay, so these are called local parameters. So So I extend those local parameters to Vn in just any way. So it doesn't matter in which way I extend it. Called local parameters. So okay. So now, well, that's omega b meromorphic n-form on Vn. Well, one can easily check that these parameters, the differentials of these parameters are linearly independent at the general point of Vn. So one can easily check that d, u, m, h, so on, d, u, 1, as not zero at, well, not, not. Yeah. You mean these parameters? I want to extend them to the whole space. Yeah.
And this is like holomorphic and everything?
They're meromorphic functions. They're meromorphic functions and they have, they're meromorphic. Meromorphic. So they can have poles and. I only have the condition that they have zero. The corresponding restriction has zero of order one at a general point. So there could be the divisor of poles can intersect. That's fine. So well then, omega is equal to some meromorphic function f times this wedge product. And furthermore, if you consider a general point of Wn minus 1, then one can expand f. Meromorphic. Well, if I have a meromorphic function on the subvariety, it extends to meromorphic function. So it's what is. So in one-dimensional case, we have only one parameter, and we don't need to extend it anywhere. So even if we have a cusp, then there is a well, yes, it is a parameter on the normalization. So, but this, it is a meromorphic function here, right? Okay. So then. Well, so I want to take a residue. I want to. I expand f into power series with respect to un. So it's going to be sum of a n u n u k a k u n to the k, where a k is a function, a meromorphic function on. On what? On Wn minus 1. Meromorphic functions on Wn minus 1. So basically, at the general point of Wn minus 1, we can consider a transversal, which is given by fixing all the parameters except for un, and then un is going to be a parameter at this transversal, and we just expand the restriction of our function to this transversal, and the coefficient depends nicely on the point. So it's going to be like this. And then we can consider the coefficient at un to minus 1, and consider the form omega n minus 1, which is a minus 1 du n minus 1, which and so on, which du 1. So this is a n minus 1 form on wn minus 1. Meromorphic form. So, and then we proceed in the same way. So, we consider Wn minus 2. We expand
this coefficient into power series with respect to un minus 2 and n minus 1, and so on. And in the end, what we got is a the meromorphic form on V0, or on W0, so it's just a function. So, proceed in the same way, and W0, right, is a function on W0, right? So just on each step we expand the coefficient, the corresponding coefficient with respect to the next local parameter, and take the coefficient at the power minus 1. So, and then the definition, the residue of omega, well, at the where do we take the residue? We take the residue at the flag, that is now the flag F, and we fix a point in W0. So let's fix some A alpha in W0. It's just omega 0 of A alpha. Well, if we want to get rid of this point, so we just sum up. So the residue of the flag of omega is just the sum over all A alpha in W0 of the residues at the flag A alpha of omega. So, well, this is the definition of the residue, and now I want to give a generalization to this theorem. Yes. So, yes, it depends on the whole flag. And so, well, on each step we restrict, we get a form on, well, not honestly on the... Yeah, it really, yes, it does depend on the flag. So it's actually about the flag. Yeah, it doesn't depend on, yes, it doesn't depend on parameters, of course, yeah. You need to specify the flag. It's not at the point. Well, yeah, it's kind of the idea is that the natural generalization of a point on a curve is a flag. So it's kind of, well.
Yeah. Okay, it's associated
basically with the flag. Yeah. So you choose point, direction, kind of. Two-dimensional direction, yeah, like this. Okay. Okay. So, and the theorem says the following. So, theorem was proved in two-dimensional case by Sparshan, and then. And multidimensional case by Lamante. The theorem is that if we fix all the elements of the flag except for one, so we fix Vn, so on, Vk plus 1, Vk minus 1, and so on, V0. And then we sum up over all the things which we can insert here. So that would be, I don't know, x, which is inside vk plus 1 and contains vk minus 1. And we take the residues had this V and so on, Vk plus 1, x, Vk minus 1, and so on to 0. Oops, goes all the way around. Omega, and this is 0. So again, we can, there is terribly many summons here, but the statement is that only finitely many of them are non-zero, and the sum is 0. So, yes, here I took k less, greater than 0, and less than n, and one can take k equal to 0, but then one needs to assume that v1 is compact. So, so the case k equal to 1, so the case where we write the 0, the point, then we need, so for k equal to 1, we need v1 to be compact. Kind of for all other cases, the sum is kind of local, so we do everything with around a fixed point. And for k equal to zero, we sum up. It's not so. We need some extra compactness. Okay, so this was all partial stuff, and now I want to go to the geometric counterpart of it. Yes? So, yeah, partial did it for n equal 2, and Lamaze did it for arbitrary n. So, anyway. Yeah, you consider all the curves going for this point.
And you call two curves the same if they have the same tangent vector there, or?
No. No. They can have, yeah, no. But
only finitely many curves.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not that surprising because actually in this case, we only care about those curves which are, for which our form has a pole along it. So. Yeah, because otherwise, it's kind of, there will be an obvious film. It will be 0. Yeah. Okay, so this was the passion stuff, and now I want to go to geometric counterpart. And well, let's just look at the example. Say at this example. So what do we want? We want to do these circles around the points. So let's try to do it. So we have the point here, and it is embedded into a nice curve here, and we can take the circle around this point on this curve. So this is one-dimensional cycle. Then if we consider, so we have this circle here. Well, maybe not a very nice picture, but let's try to imagine it. And now we need to go to the next dimension, to the dimension 2. And what we do, what we get is that at each point we have two components, and in each component we have a circle around this point. Well, in the transversal section, say, to the curve. And if you consider it all together, we got two tori here, here and here. One on one component and another on another component. Well, on this picture it's more visual. So we have two circles. And one circle on this line, one circle on one line, one circle on another line, and we have two tori. One on, around one circle and another one around another circle. And the residue is basically just the integral over this circle. So yeah, we have two points, so we have two residues, we have two tori. everything is perfect. So that's what we want to do. So in order to do it in general, we need some machinery. And the machinery comes from the theory of stratified space. So, okay. So the next up, next thing I need to talk about are the stratified spaces and the co-boundary operators for stratified spaces. So I want to make sense of this procedure of taking the circle around point and toroid around circle and so on. Let me give you a simple example, the classical example for the smooth case. What does it mean in smooth case? So suppose we have a submanifold. So that would be dimension. So let M be just real smooth manifold of dimension M, and N be a submanifold of dimension N. Well, we assume both of them to be oriented. Then, well, what do I have? I have a tubular neighborhood, let me denote it UN, of N in M, which is isomorphic to the normal bundle, to the total space of the normal bundle. In particular, we have projection, which goes from UN to M, and have the kind of distance function, which is basically the norm in this normal vibration. So it goes from UN to R non-negative. And then if we can consider the we can kind of consider the spherical bundle associated here, so just fix rho, so consider S M given by just rho n equal to 1. So Sn is fibered over n, so this is the restriction of our projection, with a fiber isomorphic to S, m minus n minus 1. And, well, out of all these things, we can cook up the following homomorphism. Phi. Okay, so phi, which goes from the homologies of N to the homologies of the complement with the shift in, with the following shift. So it's plus M minus N minus 1. So. Right? So if you have a smooth representative of a homology class, then we just take the pre-image, right? And it fits in the complement, so to represent a class there. Okay, so this was the smooth co-boundary operator. And it turns out that in the stratified case, exactly the same thing can be done in the for the stratified spaces. Basically, yeah. So suppose that now X, some X, is a stratified space. So basically, it is a locally compact Hausdorff topological space, which is subdivided into. Let me use another letter. That would be, V. And we should subdivide it into smooth strata, smooth pieces. So S here just enumerates the strata. And some nice conditions on the way they are attached is satisfied. So I don't want to specify it. I want to specify it in detail, but let me say a few words. So for any X and S, there is a tubular neighborhood, UX in V, together with this, with a projection and distance function. So we have pi x, which maps u x to x, and we have rho x, which maps u x to the non-negative. And the main property is that for any y, so if you take another stratum, then the restriction, so let us note pi x y, the restriction of pi of pi x to the intersection of u x with y. So just restrict to this stratum, and the same thing for rho x y. So then, if I take the both, so it takes this u x intersected with y to x cross r bigger than zero. So this is a submersion. Okay, so this is what it means. So that means that if we go along the stratum, the transversal structure doesn't change. So the first kind of a local triviality along stratum. Okay. So then, my analogy with the smooth case, with the case of smooth submanifold, one can define the boundary operator. So let me just give some definitions. So, well, first of all, we say that x, if x and y are strata, then we say that x is less than y if x belong to the closure of y. And another definition, we say that x less than y consequent stratum, consequent, if there is no such stratum Z that X is less than Z less than Y. So there is nothing in between them, so they are consequent. Okay, then if I have a two consequent strata, so let's XY be consequent strata, then one can define an operator shedding out phi XY, which goes from the homologies of X to the homologies of Y with a shift in dimensions. So if X has dimension n and Y has dimension m, then the shift is plus m minus n minus 1 of Y. So basically, it is done in the same way as before. So we just take rho equal to constant, restrict, we got a smooth vibration with compact fiber, and we get this homomorphism. So let me just give a brief command here. Okay, let me draw an example. Yeah, so Whitney stratification satisfies this property, so it is a trivial long stratum. So that's why. This is this is more general. So we can consider some abstract stratified space, like we don't consider any embedding of it. So Whitney is for embedded situation. Well, it doesn't depend on algebraic embedding or analytic embedding, but yeah. So. So, okay, example. So I consider a very stupid stratified space. So we have four stratum here. So X is zero dimensional, and then Z1 is this ray, one-dimensional, that to this ray, one-dimensional, and have the angle between them, two-dimensional, called y. So here, x is less than y, but they are not consequent. And if you try to do this procedure, say apply this procedure to the point itself, to the class of the point, then what we got is non-compact here. So the for fix rho x equal to some constant, and we got this thing. So we cannot go to y directly because it's not the thing we got is non-compact. But I can go to that one. So we have phi x that one. We have phi x that two. And we also have phi that one y and phi that one that two y, right? But we don't have phi x y here because they are not consequent. Okay, so now let me formulate this. So this homomorphism enjoy a very nice relation which give rise to this partial theorem. So theorem. So now let's consider the following situation. So it's kind of this situation, in fact. So suppose we have the following structure. So have x less than z1 less than y, and so on. X is less than zk less than y, and here. So everything here is consequent. So we cannot insert anything anywhere here. Okay. So x less than zi is consequent, and zi less than y consequent, and everything between y and x is here. So there is no other that such that x is less than z less than y. So we just, so these are all strata that one dot that one and so on that k are all strata in between x and y. Compact, yeah. The thing is compact. Smooth, yeah. It's always smooth. So it is smooth here as well. You know, this interval is smooth. But so I mean, if you consider, if you want to go from x to y, this thing is smooth, but it's not compact. It is smooth because we have some motion there. So okay. Yeah. Okay. So then we have the following, so we have the following relation. If you want to go from x to y, we cannot go directly, but we can go first to z1, to y, and so on. So we have k ways from x to y. And we can sum up. So let's consider phi x z1 composed with phi z1 y plus, and so on, plus phi that phi x zk composed with phi zk y. So the sum is zero. Okay, so let me illustrate on this example. So if we take this point, we can go to that one. We get this point here, so this is the representative of phi x to z1, x z1 applied to this point. Or we can go here to z2, right? And then if we go from z1 to y, we basically get this point. So we take the transversal, right? We fix the distance, so we got this point. And here we got this point. So I claim that the sum of these points is homologic to zero. Why? Well, let's try to go from x to y directly. As I said, we get something non-compact, this interval. But I can cut these two pieces from it. And I got an interval which ends are exactly those two points we got before. So this is an illustration, it's not a proof, of course. Basically, that's how it works. Okay, so I don't have time. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, let me say just a few things. So, how it connect, how it give rise to the partial reciprocity law. So, if we have a flag, we can stratify everything, and so we have flag. We stratify it in such a way that all the elements of the flag are unions of structure, and the poles of omega also is also a union of strata. Then, there are, since these guys are irreducible, there are just, for each VK, we have exactly one strata of the biggest dimension. So let me denote those strata by VN0 here, and so on, V00. Well, these are basically equal. Then one can consider the Skolboundary operators. So we just take phi V00, comma V10 and compose it and so on. In the end, we take phi Vn minus 1, 0, Vn 0. So these are all consequent strata just by dimension. There is nothing in between those strata. And we just apply to the class of V0. Right, so it's just a point, so just apply it to this. So this is a class in the n-dimensional homologies of Vn0. And I claim that the partial residue is exactly the integral over this class. And then this relation just gives the reciprocity law. Okay, that's it.